I bet you'd rather watch James do that again than hear a sermon. Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts and the way we live our lives please you, make you glad, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I would guess that most of us have had some experience with Mormon missionaries. If you haven't ever talked with one of them, you can at least identify them by sight. No matter where they are in the world, Africa, Asia, Europe, the United States, Mormon missionaries, young people with fresh faces, white shirts and skinny ties, usually on bicycles, are recognizable immediately. Spending a year as a missionary is a rite of passage for Mormon young people. It's often the year between graduation from high school and the start of college. And students pay for the privilege of going out and doing this work for their church. There's not much about being a missionary that's easy or fun. Those kids have stories about getting mugged or bitten by rabid dogs, and even more stories about doors getting slammed in their faces. They don't choose where to go. The Book of Mormon created a whole musical about a kid who hoped he would get sent to Orlando and instead ended up in Uganda. What you may not know about Mormon missionaries is that if you measure it in terms of conversions, they have a terrible success rate. For a whole year of working 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, the average number of converts that a missionary reports back for the year is 5. Of those 5, the retention rate is about 25%. That means that for each young missionary the LDS Church sends out to live abroad under dangerous conditions, to talk to people all day about their religion, the church gets 1 or 2 long-term members. That's it. So there must be a better system for growing the movement, or some other reason for making that year of missionary service the centerpiece of being raised in the Mormon tradition. And there is another reason. The people who get converted most effectively by that year of talking every day about their faith are the missionaries. With some exceptions, of course, the young adults who spend a year talking to people about who God is and what God has done come home more convinced of their own faith, whether anyone else has believed them or not. There is no better way to learn something than to teach it. No faster way to cement your familiarity with a new route home than to show it to someone else. No more sure way to hold on to a piece of insight that's important to you than to share it. The 12th and final step of the Alcoholics Anonymous journey toward freedom and wholeness goes like this. It says, having had a spiritual awakening, we tried to carry this message to others. I hear in those words an echo, a refrain of Jesus' last words to his disciples. Now you go and make disciples, he said. Baptize people. Teach them the things that I have taught you. Did Jesus say those things to his disciples for the purpose of building a bigger church? Maybe. That's how the Christian church has always interpreted what we call the Great Commission. But that's not really actually consistent with the way Jesus lived his life. He didn't seem to focus on big audiences. His own religious tradition, Judaism, has never been big on convincing other people to join them. I wonder if Jesus' instruction, "Go make disciples," wasn't instead his best advice to the disciples for how to hold on to the inspiration and sense of purpose that they'd found in their all too short 3 years next to him. How to deepen that feeling that they had that something important had shifted for them. How to move forward instead of rolling back into old habits, life as it had always been before. Go tell someone else about what God has done for you, Jesus said. That's how your sense of God becomes more real. It's how you hold on to your own change. You know, living a healed, transformed life can be an elusive, sort of slippery thing. We've heard stories of miraculous, documented physical cures. Cancer occasionally just disappears. Someone who has been blind their whole life suddenly can see. Maybe you've experienced something like that yourself. But more often, the things that we need to find freedom from are not so clearly defined as either here or gone. Even if I've had a moment of enlightenment, there is something comforting in that habit that I know is unhealthy for me, and it keeps calling me back. The same old fear and worries have a way of seeping back into my mind in the middle of the night. My lifelong pattern of gossip or blaming other people or getting too angry too quickly can seem gone, and then it's right there again, coaxing me back into old familiar ways. It turns out that healing isn't always a once and for all time thing. There's a reason that Alcoholics Anonymous folks refer to themselves as recovering, not recovered alcoholics. They know that every day they will confront the same temptations that got them into trouble before, that they have to go back every day of their lives to the steps that led them and will lead them again to freedom from their addiction. This is one of those steps. Help someone else. It's actually kind of a spiritual principle. You don't really understand something deep down until you give it away. Pass the light you've received on to somebody else. Not someday after you get your life together. Not eventually, when you might be perfectly prepared. Now, while you're still in process. Now, while you're still flawed, not perfect at all. When you're not sure you're strong enough to manage your own questionable life one more day, find someone who needs to hear what you can remember about what got you through your worst day. When you're not sure at all that anything has actually changed, find someone who's really messed up and say, "Me too." When you've forgotten what faith even feels like, tell the story of that one moment when you were sure. That's what will remind you, convince you, that God has come to you before and God will come to you again. Helping someone else by telling them about the holiness you've seen, even if it was just an incomplete glimpse, is how you hold on to that vision for yourself. D.T. Niles, the evangelist who spent his life in leper colonies in Hawaii, said, "Christianity is one beggar telling another beggar where he found bread." The story that Daniel read this morning from Luke's gospel about the bent over woman is a story about an imperfect healing. This woman, Luke says, had spent 18 years stooped over. She couldn't stand up straight. Osteoporosis is probably the diagnosis we would give her today. Now, 18 years is a long time to stare at the ground. Imagine how her view of the world changed when Jesus healed her and she was able to stand up fully. For the first time in almost 20 years, she could look straight into the eyes of a friend or her child or a person across the street. She could see the sky and what kind of weather was coming for the first time in decades. The whole world was now in her line of sight, not just the small patch of dirt underneath her feet. It must have been amazing, liberating, wonderful, right? But what did she see when she stood up? Beauty? All beauty? A world that was rejoicing with her? Hardly. You know, in the gospel stories, almost every time Jesus healed someone, it made someone else angry. This time was no exception. "Nice healing, Jesus," they said, "but today was the wrong day to do it. Any other day of the week would have been fine, but today healings are not allowed." You might think you did a good thing for this woman, but you have to do things the right way. You know, in some way, it's as if those right-thinking men in the room were bent over too, looking down instead of up, seeing only the small patch of ground that they had been standing on for a long time. What this newly healed woman saw in that room when she stood up straight and looked into those other people's faces was anger, resentment, ugliness. Maybe she went home and found her kids were still fighting with each other. All those years, she had imagined the beauty she was missing. And now that she could look up, she saw that the litter and dirt that she thought was just right there under her feet actually stretched all the way to the horizon. The big world she could see now was no more perfect than the little world she'd been confined in all those years. Her back may have been unbent, but her whole life was not straightened out by any means. And still, she said, "Look, I'm standing. This is what Jesus, the healer, did for me." And then I'd like to think she went out and told the story again and again. Maybe she kept telling it to everyone who she saw who was bent over, either literally or figuratively, just like she had been bent over. And every time she told it, I imagine, she stood up a little straighter, found a little more strength in her back than she had realized was there. This summer, Sue Foyle and I led a group through a program called the Parent Project. It was a class for parents who feel like they are failing as parents because their children are out of control. There were parents whose kids don't go to school, or who don't sleep all night, or don't come home at all. Kids who are using drugs. Kids who fight all the time. There were parents in that class whose children have been taken away from them by the courts. And over the 12 weeks of the class, we heard those parents' stories. It's how they helped each other by telling their stories, not of their great successes, because there weren't many. The stories that helped most, the stories that everyone stopped and listened to, were told by the people who had struggled the most, the people who were still struggling. I was addicted to drugs too, the most powerful stories began. I'm clean now, but I have to work at it every day. Or, we got through a big fight in my family yesterday. I'm not sure what will happen tomorrow, but today, we're okay. 12-step meetings are full of those kinds of stories. In fact, that's all meetings are. Stories that are as much about failure and ugliness as they are about success. As much as they are about beauty. Stories that remind both the listeners and the person talking that healing is something that happens most of the time in stops and starts, backward and forward, with lots of struggles along the way. That all of us, are still mostly full of imperfection. That the moments we get it right are pretty much pure grace. There is no greater healing power in the world than that kind of story. Your story. Telling the story of what God has done for you is not something you do only if you're a superstar or only after you've got every part of your life together. You tell the story of how God has found you because the telling itself will help save your life. And at the same time, it just might save someone else's. Amen.